Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer and United Artists film, directed by and starring Robert Redford.
Roadside bombs have claimed the lives of 8 U.S. soldiers today in Iraq. 4 troops were killed when an explosion struck their vehicle during combat north of Baghdad, while an airman was killed by another roadside bomb in Tikrit. 2 U.S. soldiers were killed and 3 wounded when their unit was struck by a roadside bomb in Baghdad. The death of an 8th soldier from a non-battle-related cause is under investigation. At least 3,555 members of the U.S. military have died since the Iraq War started back in 2003.
Also starring Meryl Streep, Tom Cruise, Michael Peña, and Andrew Garfield. Under a headline, Public Perceptions of the President, a press clipping shows graphs indicating a steady decline in presidential approval and a declining confidence in the Republican Party. It also shows a dip in public confidence of winning the war on terror. The graph is studied by a man in a dark suit. Next, a dossier is opened, detailing an increasing number of attacks in Afghanistan over a 3-month period. The dossier is studied intently by a man peering through specs, perched on the end of his nose. Next, an attendance register. It shows a high rate of absences for someone called Todd Hayes. This is perused by a man in thick-rimmed specs. A woman in her 50s produces a reporter's notebook as she sits in the back of a cab. British Sky Broadcasting presents Lions for Lambs. An aerial view of the Whitestone Lincoln Memorial Building. Traffic flows past another public building. A caption reads, Washington, D.C., 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Looking a little flustered, the woman with the notebook arrives at the offices of Senator Jasper Irving.
Thank you for coming in.
Thank you, sir. Senator? Absolutely. He's ready for you now, Ms. Roth.
Sorry?
The senator.
Oh! Okay.
She steps into the senator's spacious office.
Ah, good morning, Janine.
Well, the good thing about morning is it ends at noon.
Please sit down. Make some coffee, tea, water?
No, thanks.
It's terrific to see you.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming in.
Senator.
Marcia, could I have coffee, please? I read the story you did on the rise of image consultants in politics.
You did?
I thought it was a good story, actually. It's a different angle.
Thank you. Are we waiting for your PR pit bull? Or?
No, just you and me.
Oh.
No one to intercept your trick questions.
One-on-one time?
Oh. You were the first to call me the future of my party, and this is me returning the favor.
Well, it wasn't a favor. It was just how I saw it 8 years ago.
Well, nonetheless, grateful.
And considering the state of your party, how do you know the tag isn't pejorative?
Because I got 77% of the vote.
Oh, yeah. How could I forget?
Yes.
You're aware that I'm doing this timeline.
Yeah, you're doing a detailed timeline in the war on terror. And I bet if it's like every other timeline that's come out this past year, it'll be the opening salvo of a much larger retrospective of mistakes made.
Or it could just be a simple list of facts.
From which you all will pick and choose. Mm.
You don't trust us.
I trust you. And that's why we're here.
To discuss what exactly?
To see if you'd like to write an honest-to-God story again. Instead of reminding the few paying attention that we've been fighting a tough war for 6 years. Who gets the Peabody for that?
What's the story?
It's about a new plan going into motion in Afghanistan.
Afghanistan? A new plan?
A new plan that will win both the war. And as cliche as this might sound, the hearts and minds of the people.
What's the plan?
Obviously, I won't be at liberty to tell you everything.
National security, of course.
But enough so that you might write a story about what we're doing in Afghanistan now. Not 6 years ago, but now. And how those efforts can culminate into actual victory.
Mm-hmm. What is this?
This.
This meeting.
This is my honest effort to keep the press better informed. And to change the subject from the past to the future. Acknowledge mistakes and talk openly about ways of fixing them. Step by step.
How much time do we have together?
I have till 11.
The whole hour? Wow. You all must be panicked.
Oh, no. We're determined.
An Apache helicopter sweeps over a military base surrounded by rugged mountains. A caption, Afghanistan, 6:30 p.m. Afghan Standard Time. Bagram Air Force Base. Uniformed American soldiers are in a briefing. The commanding officer gets to his feet.
Listen up. Lieutenant Finch, you and your boys good?
Roger that, sir.
How's that knee?
Ready for that 15-mile hike.
Glad to hear it. Rodriguez?
All up, sir.
All right, good. I want you to take notes. I want you to ask questions. Good news first. Al-Qaeda and the Taliban have been whittled down to small wolf packs, so do not believe everything you read in the papers. We've successfully pounded the enemy into something much smaller and more impotent than when we first got here. That's good. The bad news, we have yet to step on their throats. We have yet to close. The longer we don't, the harder it gets. Remember your von Clausewitz. Never engage the same enemy for too long, or he will...
Adapt to your tactics, sir.
He will adapt to your tactics. That is correct. Case in point, in sum, is reporting that Al-Qaeda in the Badakhshan province is attempting to open up a new front.
Locals up there can't handle the fight, sir?
So that's really the whole problem. There's nobody up there strong enough to fight this enemy, and Karzai sure as shit ain't gonna let any of these guys go home now.
Sir, why is the enemy doing this now?
What is clearly happening is that the enemy is bent on establishing themselves as a legitimate fighting force for the people again.
Sir, these guys don't grow on trees, so where are they coming from?
They're going door to door. They're asking families to give up their sons. If they don't give up their sons are executed in front of the families. That's number one. Number two is Iraq. Al-Qaeda and the Taliban are starting to funnel battle-tested fighters.
Funnel through where, though, sir?
Well, that I can't tell you. I ain't gonna answer that question. Because you already know too much.
He rings Iran on a map.
So jihadi and Wahhabi terrorists are moving through Shia territory, sir?
Suffice it to say the enemy is getting stronger and the enemy is getting uglier. It is time for us to get back into their fucking kitchen. We're gonna put our foot on their throats. You are going to air assault into the Badakhshan province. You will set up an operating camp here at Pamela Left, a forward operating point, an 8,000-foot peak offering 360-degree views of the valley below. The enemy is going to want it just as badly as we do, so we've been ordered to take it first before the snow thaws. If you check your maps, you'll see there's a suitable LZ. You all got that?
Roger.
You will set up camp, you will set up comms, you will set up sat links, you will patiently wait, and if fortunate enough to engage the enemy, you will introduce them to the full measure of American mean. Are we clear? Dress warm.
The men get to their feet in the briefing tent. The CO sits and goes back to his paperwork.
We're being pushed awfully fast here, aren't we, sir?
Next, an aerial view of a university campus in California. A caption says, 7 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. A male student rides a bike through the landscape terrain. He carries two coffees in a tray on his handlebars. He parks the bike outside a building called Mead Hall. He takes off his dark glasses and soft hat and removes a pair of earphones as he enters the building with the coffees. He knocks on a door. A caption says, Professor Stephen Malley's office.
Morning.
Morning.
You want it closed? Or,
What's your guess, Todd?
Todd Hayes grins.
You know, this is unethical, making me bring you some coffee.
No more than making me look at that shirt.
Ho, Doc. This here's a genuine Rain Spooner. This is $89.99, or was it $69?
Oh, yeah? Well, I take it all back, then.
Yeah, please.
So what asked you to come in this early with a gift?
Well, you know, my sporadic absences.
Kind of sounds like the title of a book about your semester so far, doesn't it?
That's good, yeah. Yeah, I don't know, Doc. I've never, ever been this busy in my life.
What with?
Well, just like all my other classes,
This is your major.
And there's also a young lady, too.
Oh, yeah?
Uh-huh.
Oh, is this the one that you jockey to sit next to when you do come to my class?
No.
What else is keeping you busy?
President of my fraternity.
Hey.
Uh-huh.
Well, hail to the chief.
Well, come on now. You're in a house, right?
Yeah.
Gotta remember how busy it can get.
Oh, yeah. With the 4-day weekends and the 30-minute study session.
That's not what I mean.
Well, you asked me what I remembered.
All right, so what? You don't think the school should be as social as it is academic, kind of like getting two educations?
Well, I think if you can't balance the two, you shouldn't be here. I also think that most of the kids that argue that one out loud are the guys with the 2.4s trying to justify 30 grand a year for all those C's.
The professor picks up the attendance register.
Okay, my friend. You've aced a lot of the exams you've shown up for, but you've only been to 8 classes this semester. Now, that'd be a Hall of Fame run. We only met once a week.
So attendance is part of my grade all of a sudden.
Professor Malley takes off his thick-rimmed specs.
Hey, Todd. Would you take a solid B for the rest of this semester? No plus, no minus, just a straight blue-collar B? I'll give that to you. Right here. Right now. It's no bullshit.
B for what?
For not coming to another class. For not writing or reading one word I assigned to you. For not signing up for any more of my classes for the rest of your time here.
A B for nothing, huh?
You nod yes and this meeting's over.
Half the fucking class would kill for that deal.
But I'm not meeting with any of them.
I think I know what you're doing.
It's another deal. Two parts. Both non-negotiable. First part, you show up every day, every class from here on out. And second, you sit there and you let me tell you about the last two kids I had that gave me hope. Maybe that'll explain why I called you in this morning.
The student and the professor hold each other's stare. Afghanistan, a Chinook helicopter skims the snow-capped mountains. Infrared light illuminates the inside of the chopper. Two lines of soldiers in full combat gear sit facing each other on benches. They exchange banter. Arian Finch and Ernest Rodriguez play a game of slap hands.
How can you be more afraid of clouds than bullets?
Because I'd rather take a bullet than a fall.
Think you fast?
The two of them, Arian Black and Ernest White, continue their game. Back in the senator's office.
This is a very high-minded goal you've set for
yourself.
Yes,
it is a high-minded goal. But this goal for the future of Afghanistan is just a lot of hot air unless we solve the military problem first. Our special forces soldiers are going to take the high ground in key positions throughout Afghanistan before the snow thaws, allowing the enemy mobility.
And the military part has to come first. Why?
Because only after we've eradicated the enemy can we then get down to the true nuts and bolts work of keeping this new democracy breathing.
So it's basically kill people to help people.
No. No, that's not what I said. I said the enemy. Don't take that out of context.
Sorry, I was just trying to
boil
it down. So in 2002, I remember you said something like, the Taliban's back is forever broken, and then big applause.
Mission
and...
accomplished.
Right.
Writ small. Mistake.
Mistake.
Because we now know the enemy with broken backs can still crawl, and we also know that the enemy learned their lesson from that first backbreaking.
So you're taking for granted there's going to be a second backbreaking.
Would we be having this meeting if I didn't?
Is this how the rest of the hour is going to go, Janine?
I'm just asking questions. Senator, can you just give me one example of the enemy having learned a lesson?
They've woken up to the fact that we're fighting on two fronts.
Uh-huh. And history does tend to punish that kind of hubris, right?
So, we're launching this new strategy using the military as the opening punch. Taking the high ground is key. Mm-hmm. Whoever takes it owns the ability to observe, the prerogative to attack, and the opportunity to preside.
So, preside?
That's why the Romans built forts. You establish a constant presence, or you have constant violence.
So we're going to be there for good, like Romans?
I said constant, not permanent. We have to have the same patience and determination as these insurgents, or they'll simply outlast us. Now, this security allows us to build those schools and the clinics.
It's going to bring clean water support. But where is NATO in all this?
Good question. Where are they? We can't wait for them to decide when they might act, so we put this new strategy into motion now.
And why now? Why not a year ago? 2 years? 3 years?
Two reasons. First reason, the satellites and drones are not nearly as omniscient as they're marketed to be.
Anybody knows that. You just Google Predator or Global Hawk.
Second reason's ugly.
Ugly? What is that? Code for off the record?
For the time being, yeah.
Okay.
Iran.
Iran? What are they doing now?
Outside of building nuclear weapons, talking to North Korea, and telling Israel they don't know what a real Holocaust looks like. They're allowing Wahhabi insurgents to hike from Iraq to Afghanistan using the most direct route possible.
Across the countryside of Iran.
He shows her a map.
Is that confirmed?
By their denials. Proof there truly is a new axis of evil.
Oh, wow. 1,300 years of murder between the Sunnis and Shias getting backburnered now so they can kill more Americans in more places. Are we still off the record? Because this is a story.
That's negotiable. You see what I'm saying? These radicals are uniting against us. We need to remind the American people who their enemies are.
You have proof that they are uniting against us, or are you saying that there may be
don't underestimate how frightening development this is. Now, this is a significant threat to the security of our nation, and you can quote me on this. Now that Iran has nuclear potential, we simply cannot
allow
this to escalate.
When you say nuclear, it just sounds like the same kind of fear-mongering that led
up to... Your position affords you the luxury of bad opinion. Mine does not. It is my responsibility. It's part of my job description to protect the American people. Mm-hmm. And that is why we put this new strategy into motion now.
So when does it start?
He glances at his watch.
10 minutes ago.
Inside the Chinook...
Yeah, copy that. 2 minutes out.
Heads up! Sir, we're 2 minutes out! 2 minutes! Lock and load!
The men follow Lieutenant Arian Finch's orders and prepare their weapons. Ernest stares from a window at the mountainous slopes below. He clasps a night vision sight to his eye and spies in a green haze an anti-aircraft gun.
That's an old AE right there!
Anti-aircraft gun on the ridge?
Others employ their night sights.
It's all good, sir. Rhodes took pictures last night. It's an old rusty 23 millimeter with spiked barrels.
Good eye, though.
Rusted and spiked. Inoperable.
Spiked? By who?
Point is, it can't shoot.
What? An old AA gun that can't shoot can make for a nasty truck.
Sir, I see this kind of junk from the air all the time. That's why we call this place trash cannon!
Shots penetrate the inside of the helicopter. Soldiers fall. The chopper swings crazily.
Get it!
Rodriguez dives for the rear-facing gun by the open ramp. There's an explosion, and the Chinook lurches, sending Ernest hurtling into the snow-swirling night sky.
Lynn! Lynn! Lynn!
The chopper is out of control. Arian Finch leaps from the open ramp without a parachute. The Chinook stumbles on through the freezing air, on fire with smoke bellowing. Professor Malley and his student, Todd Hayes, continue their conversation at the university.
What are their names again?
Ernest, Arian.
Wait, like Master Race, Arian.
We spell it with an I instead of a Y. What's your point?
If you looked up irony, huh?
What?
You know, a guy named Arian, he can only be African-American.
What difference does that make? Stay focused on the American part.
All right. So they play ball, huh?
It's the only way they could afford to come here.
Scholarship athletes. Mm-hmm. You want to come up with two guys more different than me? What?
You know, professors aren't teachers, they're salesmen.
Okay. So what do you sell?
You to you.
You know, you don't have to do me any favors, Doc.
Why is that, Todd?
Why don't you have to do me any favors?
Why don't you care anymore?
How do you know I cared before? Just because I showed your class?
Yeah. You not only showed up, you got involved. You read everything I assigned. You were hungry. You leaned into those lectures. You went for the jugular in every debate. Now, my question to you is, why not anymore?
I already answered you. A lot of things. Girls. Bullshit. Fraternity. A social life.
Hey, Todd, come on. Go on.
Don't want to hurt your feelings.
Hey. We got an hour. Don't waste a second worrying about my feelings. I'm not worrying about yours.
Thanks. You should write Hallmark cards.
Okay, go on.
All right. Political science, Doc. What's scientific about it outside of maybe the psychology behind how much shit voters will swallow before they notice? Science part? It's really only about how to win. Not how to govern, not how to make anybody any better, just how to win. No matter how stupid or two-faced or criminal, you gotta make yourself look.
Give me an example.
Okay, like presidential candidates now. They announce their candidacy by standing in front of a large audience and loudly saying they will not run for president, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, what is that shit?
It's as old as time.
No, I don't think so, because you had me when we were studying the old philosophers. Greeks. I mean, Doc, you had me. They were awesome. Somewhere you lost me, I don't know.
Have you ever been to Greece?
No.
No, of course not. Otherwise, you know, their government makes ours look like a streamlined vision of the future.
Well, isn't that my point? Socrates, Plato, Aristotle, they can fix things. What the hell is Todd Hayes gonna do?
Bitch, quit.
Hey, look, I'm gonna pay my taxes, all right? I'm gonna obey traffic lights.
Geez,
I'm gonna
give
to my charity.
Super. I was thinking about something bigger.
Something bigger? Bigger like what? Like be a congressman bigger?
Well, that's bigger.
Oh, yeah. Super. And then I get to be one of those turds in D.C., and I do mean pure pieces of shit, who make our laws. I get to be a doughboy who parts his hair the same side as everyone else, the guy who never says anything, even though he never stops talking. Do I get to be the guy who lectures you on morality while a page jacks me off under the table? Oh, yeah. Please, the guy who funnels away a million that doesn't belong to him and then bawls like an evangelist when he gets caught. And how many never get caught, Doc? Hey, if that's something bigger than being a good Joe with a good job, fuck it. Yeah, that's where you lost me.
Mally's blue eyes burn into the student, who muses, holding his gaze and then looking down.
You almost convinced me. Almost convinced me.
What?
That you really know what you're talking about. You're great with words, Todd. But you know what would make them even better? Is that they had a heartbeat. If they were rooted in any kind of experience... If you had knocked on doors, licked envelopes, been to a damn public rally, just put yourself on the line in any meaningful way.
Licking envelopes, that's putting myself on the line, huh?
Infinitely more than just talking.
Snow swirls in the icy wind, which sweeps through the craggy mountaintops in Afghanistan. On a snow-covered plateau, a figure stirs in pain. An assault rifle is strapped to his body. It's Lieutenant Arian Finch. He tries in vain to get to his feet. Snow grips his face and his Arctic uniform. He quivers from the pain and shivers from the cold. He spots another figure lying in the snow to his left. The other figure is also in military uniform.
Brother.
Back at the Air Force base.
Pamela, left is hot.
How hot?
Chinook took hits from small arms RPGs.
Talking to the pilots?
And they have dead and wounded on board, and they didn't land at their objective.
Where did they land?
3 kilometers south on the plateau. Choppers fucked for good. 2 men missing.
Missing? Lead with that. Who's missing?
Finch and Rodriguez. Consensus on the chopper is that they fell out over a small ridge short of the Plan LZ. No guessing on whether or not they survived.
The CO stares at a map. A circle is round an area marked LZ Hawk. On the plateau, the other soldier, Ernest Rodriguez, regains consciousness.
Ernie! Brother!
Arian! You fucking idiot! How bad are you?
Ernest touches his left hand and grimaces in pain.
Oh. Bad! Can you get to me? I'm stuck! My leg's jammed! There you go.
I'll launch the rescue chopper.
Get them in the air, but vector them halfway between Pamela left and us. We're not going to put them in that same gauntlet. Put them in a holding pattern till we know what's going on. Can we see anything? You got a predator up?
I don't know for how long. Cold front's still coming. G2 says it's packing big snow, maybe 70 mile an hour.
All right, I want to see as much as I can for as long as I can. What's the ETA in getting a fast mover out there?
I got a Warthog that'll take 20, 25 minutes to get out there, but the margin is safe.
Scramble it. Do it. I would love to talk to the motherfucker that said this mountaintop was secure.
Afghan terrain demands that small, specialized teams establish forward operating points.
I've heard of forward operating bases, but not Forward operating. Points. Point sounds smaller than base.
Because it is. What? Say it.
Sorry, no. It also sounds like Pentagonese for bait.
Janine, it's not like we're putting one or two guys on the mountain here. Right. But small is how we fight now.
Mm-hmm. Says the man in the air-conditioned room.
This is a fight that we're in. And unfortunately, civilizations do not sustain themselves through nonviolent response.
What does that mean? Are you going to now forego diplomacy and State Department treaties?
We were attacked. You do not respond to an attack with diplomacy. Bin Laden's idea of diplomacy is not filming the beheadings. Saddam violated 16 UN resolutions, and the UN responded by issuing 30-plus sternly worded statements condemning his behavior, all the while France, China, and Russia continued to trade with Saddam under the table.
And didn't we also arm Saddam in the 80s?
But here we are now.
Yes, here we are now. And don't you think it might be critical to examine how we got to this
how
point?
How and why is not the issue now. We have to move forward. We're fighting a brand of evil that thinks the last 1,300 years of human progress is heresy, punishable by violent death. Now, if that's something that you don't feel should be wiped from the face of the earth...
I would like to see Bin Laden dead and gone as much as anybody, but I just don't understand how you cannot want to look at the past, not think it's critical.
What is critical? What is relevant is the implementation of a new strategy that will win this war. A war we cannot lose.
But we're not winning it.
Yet. This new strategy can change that.
How about a strategy to bring the troops home?
The handsome senator in his 40s leans back.
So leave.
That's not an option.
Okay, let's play this out. We walk, and Afghanistan reverts back to the Taliban. Only now the Taliban has metastasized into something infinitely more vicious and potent because they're now 2-0 versus superpowers. They butcher the people who helped us, who voted, who were stupid enough to put their faith in our word. So call it not only the end of hope for tens of millions of Afghans, but the end of American credibility. The end of America as a force for righteousness in the world.
When did America
And when we're
become...
forced to go back in a couple of years, and please quote me on this, we'll be squared off against a shattered Iraq, a hopeless Afghanistan, and a nuclear Iran. How many troops are we going to need then? I guarantee you'll be adding some zeros.
Wait, may I speak freely? You're about to implement another new strategy, regardless of the human cost or the financial cost, because you predict
we thought
that
deeply
maybe...
about the human cost when we were planning this strategy.
What were your estimates exactly?
What I can say is that this strategy has patience and determination at its core. It ensures that it puts our fighting men in spots where they can face, fight, and kill the enemy, so that we can then go about rebuilding that country. And if it takes 10 years, that's how long we stay. We do whatever it takes.
Whatever it takes.
Whatever it takes.
Then why did it take 3 years to up-armor our Humvees?
They're up-armored now, at my constant urging.
Add-ons don't provide the same protection, Senator. You know that. And why does the President insist on spending billions on subs and fighter planes that are completely useless in this kind of
what
war?
What do you think I'm working
and
on?
And why do we send 150,000 troops to a country that did not attack us, and one-tenth that number to the one that did?
How many times are you people going to ask the same question?
Till we get the answer.
Okay. Here goes. Iraq was almost a first world country.
Was is the operative tense.
We took it quick because we had the numbers. Afghanistan was, is, and always will be the definition of rugged third world. Big numbers have bogged down there since before Alexander became the Great.
We took Iraq? How did I miss that?
Militarily, we did. We made mistakes. Colossal mistakes. That should never be forgotten. But 6 years ago, who could have known what to do or when to do it after watching our jets fly into our buildings? Do you remember how petrified we were at what our enemies might do for an encore? And how all at once, everything was at risk. Families, friends, the kindergartens, the rivers and bridges, nuclear plants. Do you remember how terror colored that next morning in shades we'd never seen before?
Mm-hmm.
Tens of thousands have died since because of that fear and the mistakes it inspired. But the question I'm left with, the question that keeps me up at night, because I have to answer it, is what do we do now?
On the mountain in Afghanistan, both soldiers go for their rifles when they hear a noise. Ernest's rifle is broken. He dumps it in the snow and pulls out his pistol. Arian gathers his composure and prepares his rifle.
First platoon!
At base, they study a satellite picture.
Oh my God, they're moving in.
They anxiously watch as Taliban fighters get closer to their two stranded soldiers. The CO stressfully clasps his hands at the back of his head. On the mountaintop, Arian fires his rifle.
They're alive.
Okay.
It's just snow blowing.
Watch him up late.
Give me the A-10 pilot. I want a goddamn ETA.
They just said 18 minutes.
That was 7 minutes ago. I want to talk to the pilot now.
Sir, the rescue bird is in its holding pattern, waiting for your word.
All right, so what Ernest and Arian, they volunteered.
Is that a question or an accusation?
All right, it's just a question.
Yes, they volunteered.
They're like adrenaline types. Like, they like it extreme, those kind of
guys. No, Ernie and Arian aren't adrenaline types. What I was talking about was fearless, being terrified, but willing yourself to the next step.
It's courage, right?
But of the real kind. What are you afraid of, Todd? Most everybody's afraid of not getting a job, or moving in with their parents, or student loan payments looming.
Yeah, that all scares me too, Doc.
Or the voice in your head that keeps asking really awful questions like, should I be doing more with my gifts? Am I making the most out of my time here on this planet?
I think everybody asks themselves those kind of questions.
A lot of us are afraid of the answers. Do you remember the second or third lecture you ever had with me? And I called you out of the blue? You sat way over to the side where most of you guys sit when you don't want to be called on to talk. You know, close enough to have commitment, but just far enough away where I can't see you to call on you.
It's called embarrassment. You asked. Reading, and I just said I didn't do the reading.
But on reflex, no excuses, no bullshit, honest.
I was just terrified.
But you willed yourself to the next step. And do you remember the subject we were discussing? What that reading was all about?
You try to block embarrassing moments out, don't you?
It was about that clinic they were opening up on Adams. They were passing out clean, free needles to addicts. Mm-hmm. And a class of 80 people thought that that was a pretty good idea. They thought, yeah, stop spreading of disease and maybe cut crime a bit. And you said...
Look, if we're going to spend tax dollars, our tax dollars, to help people break the law in a safer way, why don't we have a designated drunk driver lane on the highway, too?
What?
It's a much bigger problem than IV drug use, and it's the exact same logic.
You're talking economics.
Yeah, I'm talking economics, and I'm also talking about safety.
No,
okay, wait a minute. You just admitted you didn't even read the assignment.
No, I didn't, but I can still think. I've still got a
He's
brain.
Right.
He's right. What do you mean? No, no.
Yeah, well, you know. I can kick a hornet's nest with the best of them, Doc.
Yeah, but the kid who didn't read the assignment and admitted it becomes the center of one of the most interesting debates I've ever been a part of. Where did that kid go?
A clock says 10:37.
So I take it to mean you think that the number of troops that we have in Afghanistan now is enough.
I do. And a big part of why we're able to do more with less in Afghanistan, outside of the precise intel that we have in the area, is the superior nature of our special forces. I mean, these guys are pros.
Mm-hmm. It really reminds me of Abrams in 68.
Abrams?
Huh? Yeah. Remember? Mm-hmm.
How long ago was that?
Can't get the Viet Cong to engage in big fights, so we'll send out smaller groups so that they can't resist ambushing us. At least we'll be fighting. 58,000 names say that new strategy didn't work out so well.
What is your problem with evolution? With utterly capable platoons, a special forces soldier surgically ferreting out the enemy...
Again, platoons are small.
Again. Small is the point. Abrams. What are you, TiVo, the History Channel?
No. 68 was my first year reporting. It was my college newspaper.
Liberal rag?
Yeah. I never lost my taste for it.
Lucky me. 1968.
Yeah, you were six.
But reading at a sixth grade level. 40 years in this racket.
You don't have to say the duration out loud.
40 years means you should have enough salt to know that we're at a tipping point. Now, the American people need to understand it is not only our choice to stop these insurgents, but our moral obligation. We simply cannot allow their form of evil and terror to spread. Now, through precise military action, we will take the essential first step.
First step? But what have we been doing for the past 6 years, Senator? World War II took less than five.
He half smiles icily. On the mountain, Arian frantically tries to free himself from the snow by digging with his rifle. He stares across at Ernest.
Roll over! I gotta see your leg! See if it's compounded. Don't black out!
While Arian stares through his rifle sights, Ernest painfully rolls his body over in the snow. There's a gaping wound in his leg. Arian looks at his friend's injuries, screwing up his face.
You need a tourniquet!
I'm one-handed!
Arian makes a renewed attempt to free his trapped leg from the snow, digging desperately with his hands and then his helmet. Ernest lies shivering as he grips his revolver.
Push through, brother! Push through! Rescue's coming!
Arian points his rifle towards where the voices come from.
There's nothing debatable about it, Janine.
But, Senator, the American people, if they're going to accept yet another new strategy, I think, want more than just vague admissions of past mistakes. Can you tell me, in your own words, exactly where you think we went wrong?
Irving ponders as she stares at him with a steady gaze.
Worst intel in our history. Decision makers who've never bled in a fight. Bad PR.
Bad PR?
You guys had a heyday with that grave. That was quite the meal ticket.
Have you ever bled in a fight?
Intelligence, 6 years.
But not the infantry, right?
You know this. I graduated first in my class at West Point. I excelled at intelligence. Are you asking me to apologize for an achievement?
No. I would never do that.
He sinks back in his leather chair and smiles, studying her face.
You know, here we are having a high-minded debate about war and policy, and it just occurred to me that you're not going to be able to fit a real story in between those home of the free, land of the obese exposés and all your network's entertainment coverage. Maybe if I keep my fingers crossed, I might get a 7-second mention from that focus group created anchor of yours with the big hair. Forgive me, it's Summer Hernandez Kowalski. Is that her real name?
Mm-hmm.
What happened to you guys? When did you all become a windsock?
A what?
Windsock. Blows with the prevailing breeze. When did you start confusing majority opinion with the right opinion?
Sort of like when we supported going into Iraq.
Supported? No. You guys sold it. Your network led every report about the invasion of Iraq, with the digital screen size flag, the square-jawed saluting Marine, and the bald eagle soaring to Aaron Copland.
That's because we believed and you believed that Iraq was a legitimate enemy.
They
and you asked us for the benefit of the doubt because we have troops in harm's way.
And your network provided that benefit without a blush.
We gave it to you.
She looks down at her notebook.
We both. Janine? We both put our fighting men at risk. I've admitted my mistakes. When will you?
She looks uneasy as he stands over her.
Call from Senator Skilkin on line 2.
Thank you. Ask him to wait a second, please. You know, in a sense, we're on the same team. We're teammates. We both have a responsibility. You've already sold the war. Now I'm asking you to help me sell the solution. Excuse me, I have to take this call.
Could use the phone in here.
You think I want to let you hear me beg for money?
He flashes a pearly smile as he leaves. She stares around the senator's office as she sits at the other side of his sturdy oak desk. She gets to her feet. A furled American flag, taller than she is, stands next to a window. She peers through her thick-rimmed specs at photographs on the dark green walls. Senator Irving is pictured with former defense chief Colin Powell. He's waving and smiling with George W. Bush. On the window ledge, there's a framed photo of Irving and Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice, both smiling at the camera. She turns to another wall, where a degree from Harvard University hangs. There's a picture of Abraham Lincoln and another of Irving in military uniform. Above a leather Chesterfield sofa that matches the color of the walls is a quote from Theodore Roosevelt. If I must choose between righteousness and peace, I choose righteousness. Her eyes widen as she sees the front page of Time magazine in a frame. Irving's face stares out. Who's who in Washington, says the headline. The new faces on Capitol Hill. Her byline is on the article. First-time Senator Jasper Irving has the potential to infuse the GOP with desperately needed vibrance, in the same way that John Kennedy infused the Democrats. Irving is indeed staking a claim as the next best hope. The future of the Republican Party he has, in small but not insignificant ways, already begun redefining. On the mountain, Arian stares anxiously through his rifle sights. There's dried blood on his face. Ernest, also blooded, lies gripping his pistol. Arian lowers the rifle.
Why are they waiting?
Maybe trying to take us alive. Figuring out how.
Arian starts digging at the snow again to try to free his trapped leg. He frantically uses his helmet as a scoop. Arian shakes his head and gives a desperate wry smile at his friend's advice. In flashback, Professor Malley in a lecture room.
Okay, Team One gets to set the bar. The topic they've pulled... What foreign relations theory or concept can best be applied here at home to greater effect? Okay, Team One, you're up. 15 minutes, flame or fame?
As students, Arian and Ernest go to the front of the lecture theatre. The professor puts on his specs and takes a seat in the front row. He sets down his watch. A slide comes up. Arian Finch and Ernest Rodriguez, Team One. Arian drops the microphone and their notes. Both crouch down to pick things up.
Man, hey, what? You okay? You ready to do this?
Yeah.
Breathe.
Let him breathe, then.
Breathe.
No, you gotta forgive my boy. He's so desperate to get my dumbass a good grade, he's either gonna shit his pants or swallow his tongue.
Know why they cut affirmative action? It was his GPA.
In the present time, Todd is still with the professor.
So what about you, Doc?
What about me?
Well, those who can't do, teach. Seriously, is being a professor doing the most with what you were given? Are these your gifts?
You got me. You know, 30 years ago, I had a whole different idea about what this job was going to be. I was going to publish theories that would change the thousands that read them. The university fathers were going to be so impressed with me that they would offer me season tickets on the 50 just to make sure I stayed.
Jesus, some elaborate daydreams there.
Yeah, aren't they?
Yeah.
Papers I do get published don't get read. Students do come to me for advice, but the school still spells my name wrong on memos and mail.
So what? You still here for the money?
Money? God, no. No. I'm still here, Todd, because I'm a selfish man. I'm selfish for the very rare times when you really know you have someone in one of your classes that has rare gifts to go on and do big things on a big scale. I realize that my gifts aren't my theories, but my ability to recognize great potential in others and maybe give them a little shove when they need it.
You think I'm one of those people?
What do you think?
Ernest and Arian, they were able to show you they were rare? Like every day?
Just enough to erase doubt. No, the only real difference between you and them, Todd,
Since you're a naturally gifted student, they weren't. They had to work their asses off. Didn't come easy for them like you.
That, and they could also hit 90-mile-an-hour fastballs? Hey, I'll trade them, Doc.
No, they trade you. They went to these high schools in the area around where they grew up. God-forsaken place that bear no resemblance to the schools you or I went to. Metal detectors on every door, teachers carrying mace. And these awful places did them not one favor. Saw the same thing when I was in Vietnam.
What?
The first guys to sign up to fight are the very ones this country really doesn't treat that well. And here, Ernest and Arian, growing up in these neighborhoods where people butcher each other for the most simple-minded shit. You were raised in a neighborhood 2 blocks south from where I was raised instead of north. Bam. The rims on your car are better than mine. Bam. And what do they do after they scrape themselves up and get out of these places in one piece? They go out to fight for the very country that all but ignores these neighborhoods unless there's a riot or a drive-by epidemic. Now, on the flip side, you got kids that can take advantage of every single gift this country has.
It's like me, right?
And usually they're the first ones to take a big step back when it comes time for volunteers.
Are you recruiting me?
Recruiting you?
You sold the army to Ernest and Arian, and now you're trying to sell it to me.
Todd looks up at a photo of soldiers.
Three guys in that photo never came home. One guy's in prison for life. You want to know what the worst wound I ever got was?
He shows a scar on his forehead.
54 stitches protesting in Chicago after I came home. I did just the opposite of recruiting Ernest and Arian. Did I like what they did? No. Did I agree with what they did? No. In fact, it broke my heart. But that doesn't mean I don't revere the reasons they went. They took action because they believed the best way to change things in this country was to go fight for it.
Engagement. Engagement is the foreign relations concept that we would like to apply here at home. We're pretty good with it abroad. Our Secretary of State has traveled more miles than any in history, and we have more embassies than ever.
To your first point, isn't that just because of easy access to jets? And to the second, aren't there just more countries now to put embassies in?
We can choose not to fly those jets, and we can choose not to recognize any new country. But choosing to do so, I guess, is engagement.
Ooh. Again, we're pretty good with engagement outside of our country, even though we've had some big failures.
Like?
Like 9/11 in Rwanda, Somalia. It's a communist country 90 miles outside of Miami.
We just need a lot more than 15 minutes to talk about that.
Yeah, well, no country's perfect.
Every country should want to be better. Look, homeboy, if you cool with that, you would like to use the rest of the time we have left to focus on engagement and how we see it abroad, and we don't see the same on our streets. Now, we've totally turned away from the biggest problems here at home, even though the best way to double the size of the problem is just to turn your back on it.
Yeah, so who knew? America needs to do more.
We do.
Why?
We do.
A slide entitled High School.
Like, do away with your junior year of high school.
And there's three options instead of just going to school. You get a Peace Corps year abroad, an AmeriCorps year here, in one of the 500 poorest zip codes, or an ROTC-like apprenticeship here or abroad, but everybody picks one, and nobody gets a note from mom.
Oh, man, come on, is this another joke?
Yo, man, was democracy a joke? Was civil rights a joke?
How about every junior then also learns to march in formation, and we invade our neighbors?
We would get lost on the way.
Listen, 73% of all California freshmen cannot name the country that borders Minnesota, can you? 77% of all U.S. freshmen cannot name both senators from their home state. And 50% of all eighth graders can't write or do math at eighth grade levels.
And when 25% of our workers didn't function, we called it a Great Depression.
Now, what do we call 50% of our students not functioning?
A Greater Depression?
Yeah.
Oh, and Canada borders Minnesota.
That's the smartest thing you've said all day.
Yeah, but what about costs? What do you mean so ridiculous and infeasible would they be?
I mean, not as ridiculous as the $9,000 we spend per student per year. $9,000 times what? 3.8 million juniors? That's $34 billion, man. We spend $2 billion more now than we did 5 years back.
And for worse results.
Who wouldn't want to be part of an experience where it's not about your race, it's not about your wealth, not even where you come from? Common only because we're American. I guarantee you that would make us better for life. And the shame is, we don't get that type of level playing ground, not in this country, unless there's a draft.
The students look uneasy.
So, I'd have to stay in school a year longer
You've been here 8 years, bro.
We could all, with all the degrees and all the money we're gonna make, go hide in a big house with high walls.
Oh, when hasn't a big house with high walls been the American dream?
July 5th, 1776.
What about December 8th, 1941?
September 12th, 2001?
So you two don't want to go to Harvard Law or Stanford Business after you graduate here? You don't want to make money? I say bullshit. I think it's totally hypocritical for you to just talk this giant game.
Professor Malley observes, looking interested. Two new slides, letters from the Army about orders to report for induction. The letters are addressed to Ernest and Arian. The professor looks startled. His two star students stared at him challengingly. He removes his specs and stares at the slides. Later, the professor is in a restaurant with Arian and Ernest.
Doc, what's going on with you? You look like you're getting ulcers over there.
No, I've had the ulcers. Question is whether or not they're bleeding.
Oh, you gotta stop worrying, thinking that that project made us enlist. It didn't.
I don't believe that. Come on, you guys. You two could pick any grad school in any field you want.
$200,000 in the hole the day you graduate.
Loan forgiveness programs?
Yeah, they're programs, but they're not as forgiving as they advertise.
Arian's doing a lot of talking for both of you.
Oh, you think he did the math all by himself? Doc, you're the one who tells us not to live over a safety net.
I didn't think that was going to translate to you guys heading out to a war. If I did, I would have cut my tongue out.
I think you're missing the point, Doc.
Yeah.
Why? Because I can't see the Army as a better gig than graduate schools most students would give an arm to get into?
No, because you're not seeing that if we did anything else, we wouldn't be a part of the most important things going on right now. Doc, these events are going to define our lives, just the same way Vietnam did for yours.
I didn't enlist. I was drafted. World War I, German soldiers wrote poems about the bravery of British grunts, admired them, almost as much as they laughed at the British high command who wasted those same grunts by the hundreds of thousands. German general wrote, "Nowhere else have I seen such lions led by such lambs." Gosh, that statement is so dead on right now. These star scholars that started this war, that are running it now, nowhere near the best and the brightest, not even in the same galaxy. They're the ones that, when some of our men are blown to bits in the middle of a gun battle, say shit like, "Oh, the enemy may have bloodied our nose, but we're learning from our mistakes."
We agree. What's the problem?
So what's the problem? What are you talking about?
Yeah, I mean, we already know how the system works.
Guys, think. Think.
We've thought that far ahead.
Because it's going badly makes it even more important, Doc.
I don't... What do you mean?
We wouldn't have spent 3 weeks in school on Nixon without Watergate.
If we killed bin Laden on 9/12, or if Iraqi Shiites greeted us with a ticker tape parade, we would never have to think about things like, who are these people? Does religion really preach murder? Do they really need a dictator to stop themselves from massacring each other?
The greatest military in history can't catch three guys. Come on.
And how do you preach democracy and still send billions to Saudi kings who are the furthest thing from it?
So just load yourselves into the breach, huh?
Or sit on the bench. The men who lead are the ones that do work. When there's work to be done.
Will you step up when you need it? Or will you just sit back and let the other people do the lifting for you?
Just simple questions.
With potentially really awful answers. Guys, trust me. Please trust that if I thought this fight was worth the sweat, I'd back you. I would. But what about stepping up here? Changing policy at home?
Look, we go do this now, then we come back and go to school.
On the Army's dime.
Then we can do something. Black and Mexican combat vets. With an education. God. Damn, no debt to dictate what we do next? They gotta listen to us then, Doc. We can change things.
If.
Back in the present time, the snow continues to swirl over the mountaintop in Afghanistan where Arian and Ernest are stranded. Arian stares nervously over his rifle, which he has trained on a distant craggy ridge. In full combat gear and in pain, Ernest lies awkwardly gripping his pistol. At the airbase, they show up on a satellite picture as two black marks. Beyond the ridge, other black marks are moving in on them.
So why isn't Telly just rushing? I'm finishing it.
Because we're worth more captured than killed.
The pilot.
ETA to my boys. All right, when you get there, you shoot straight. I want you to apprise a rescue chopper of all of this. You tell them we've got an A-10 bomber moving in there to attempt to clean it out, but they are heading into a still-hot LZ with exposed friendlies. I want you to make sure that this is heading the correct way up the command chain. You understand me? You tell them this is not as easy as it looks 9,000 miles away.
The senator comes back into his office.
Jeanine, I'm sorry to keep you waiting. There's a vote up now, so
In 1991, my network, ANX, was bought by a corporation best known for selling soap and light bulbs. And overnight, we went from a news organization preoccupied with gathering news to a business unit preoccupied with ad revenue and ratings. A windsock. And I knew it. When I signed my contract, I knew it. But I thought I could keep my autonomy, you know. I thought that little raise they gave me meant they were still committed to hard news. But anyway.
Jeanine.
He gestures to an armchair near the marble fireplace. He glances at the wall clock. It's 12 minutes to 11. He sits next to her.
Thank you for that.
It's just the truth. How can I verify the results of this mission? You're not going to be embedding press with these troops,
are you? No, there's no room. Our special forces travel fast and light. But I can provide the infrared and the gun camera footage.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Those are always the most popular downloads.
And any developing details will come directly from me to you.
Great. Thank you. Yeah. Now let me kill the good feeling.
You? Really?
Worst case scenario. Forward operating points don't work.
They will work.
Has the president contemplated surging the troops in support of this strategy, if it's necessary? Military is stretched pretty thin right now. Maybe you'll have to send kids didn't sign up to go.
A draft? No. We don't need it. We have everything we need to break the enemy right now, except the public will to do it. That's where you come in.
But how do we know you're going to get it right this time? You know, people are very mistrustful. You know, after 9/11, we had the whole world on our side. Here we are 6 years later, stumbling through one of the worst times ever to be an American.
Look, come on, Jeanine, hyperbole is not going to do us...
Come on, nobody is monitoring our patriotism here. You have to admit, this is one of the five worst times to fly the stars and stripes. People need...
A win, Jeanine. The people, the president, me. We all need a win in Afghanistan. Winning allows our public to refocus. Winning... gets Congress back in the mood to talk instead of yell.
And it helps the people of Afghanistan.
That goes without saying.
And it helps your party.
Because we are the party that represents security. The power that this country is known for. The party that signals tyrants the world over that the USA has a stomach and stamina to finish our fights.
Finish?
Do you want to win, Jeanine?
What?
Do you want to win the war on terror? Yes or no? Yes or no?
It's a broad...
Okay, you see this. This is the quintessential yes or no question of our time. But equivocation is defeat. You stop for a second and you're dead. The only option for America...
Excuse me.
A man in a dark suit whispers in the senator's ear. He hands the senator a slip of paper.
Excuse me.
With a frown, the senator crosses to his desk and picks up a phone.
Irving?
She watches from the armchair. He receives the information with a stony face. She studies his face curiously as he stands with a phone to his ear.
When?
Ammo!
As their eyes scan the rocky ridge, rifle rounds are fired at them. The bullets fall short. The two of them return fire.
Reloading!
How much ammo do they have left?
How the fuck would I know?
Why is the tally hidden?
I think they're trying to get them to empty their clips.
The senator ends his phone call.
Keep you posted.
It's just covering fire! Save your ammo!
Two figures scuttle between the rocks. Arian hits one. Back at the senator's office.
Tell you what, I am sick and tired, Janine. I am sick and tired of being humiliated. Over and over again, we have allowed our great country to be threatened by these little tribal ragtag gangs. And it's going to stop.
She stares somberly.
Do you realize what we've got? Do you realize what our capability is?
Her eyes widen.
Because God knows. It breaks my heart to ask the men and women in uniform to risk their lives for this victory. But I know in my gut there is no other way to that end. Not with this enemy. Not with their medieval beliefs. But the solace that I can provide the families of our fallen with absolute conviction is that at least their lives are about something.
She blinks as he stares intently at her. He lowers his gaze and frowns.
Now, the tax internet transactions or not tax internet transactions? That is the question. Marcia?
Senator.
My notes, please.
Janine gets to her feet as he puts on his jacket.
This is your strategy, is it not, sir?
It is a product of new school military thinking.
And you are the new school. You have the ear of the president more than the defense secretary.
So?
So, if it succeeds with your name on it, it's a great way of separating yourself out from the rest of the pack in your party who'd like to be president.
Let me state this as loudly as possible. I'm not running for president.
They lock eyes.
This has been a good hour. This is a big story. And it's yours. This is my direct number. Still been waiting to hear back. Call if you have any questions.
Thank you.
Marcia, could you come in, please?
Janine looks deep in thought as the door bearing a gold government crest shuts behind her. Outside, in the wide Washington street, she hails a taxi and gets in, holding her two bags. In the back of the cab, she massages her neck and brushes her hand over her face with a troubled look. She takes out her notes, all in neat shorthand, except for one sentence. Whatever it takes, exclamation mark. She stares around painfully, deliberating. On the mountain, Arian stares over his rifle with weary, tired eyes. Ernest shivers. Yeah. Missiles from an American A-10 explode all around them, piercing the darkness with orange flame. As the smoke bellows up, the two of them press themselves into the snow, covering their faces.
Any idea how many left?
A dozen or more, I don't know.
Get on the phone with the A-10, tell him to keep making runs until he's out of ammo.
ETA and the rescue bird is 6 minutes. Headwinds.
Put me back on with the pilot.
Arian and Ernest are now just visible on the fuzzy satellite screen. Another wave of missiles sends rocks and debris hurtling into the air. Arian peers into the murky fog of the missile smoke.
Is it over? For us if they live! Eyes up!
Back to Professor Malley in mid-conversation with Todd. A wall clock says 4 minutes to 8.
So I'm supposed to go implement Arian and Ernie's junior year project, even though that thing sounded like a fairy tale to me? You gave them an A for that?
I gave them a B plus.
What?
A B plus. They were loose on their stats.
No, I heard you. Why aren't you telling me about the students who got an A?
Because I don't remember them right now.
So what? Attendance is a prerequisite for you, but grades aren't.
Aha! You're onto the secret now, Todd. It's called potential. And believe me, that's a far better signal of what you might do than getting an A in some class you might forget about in 2 or 3 years.
Sounds a lot like what kids with 2.4s tell themselves to justify all the C's.
That's very nice, but neither got C's.
Maybe both got blue-collar bees.
Not by quitting.
You happy they're over there?
Todd, I told you twice. I did everything I could to stop them.
But revered the reasons they didn't.
Yeah.
So I'm supposed to listen to your advice. This direction you're trying to give me, even though the two you've been telling me about didn't listen. They went ahead. They did what they were going to do anyway. Okay, maybe, just maybe, you might be dropping the hammer on me because of how rarely you find a student you think is worth the time and how often it sounds like you fail at getting through once you did find those students.
Actually, the failing started about 10, maybe 15 years ago. You know, the truth is, Todd, I used to knock meetings like this out of the park.
And what changed?
You. Students sitting across from me.
Because we're more shrewd, because we see how things work, because we don't want to die for these pieces of shit.
Because you want to put as much distance between yourself and the real world as possible. And these pieces of shit, by the way, how many times are you going to say that? They bank on your apathy. They bank on your willful ignorance. They plan strategies around it. They try to figure out how much they can get away with because of it.
So blame me for it all. Blame me, because I might just want to live the good life, because I can, because I'm smart enough to. You're going to blame me? Because I don't want to work elbow to elbow with you on a goddamn collective farm. Doc, you are sounding a hell of a lot like my parents. They're always harping on how they're giving me a better life than they ever had. And then they resent the shit out of me because I got the nerve to enjoy it.
Todd, what good is a $90,000 Benz? There's not only not enough gas in the tank, but the streets and the highways are decaying to the point of becoming third world. If all your rants about Congress and politics are true, Todd, if things are really bad, as bad as you say they are, when thousands of American troops are dead and more are dying every day, probably as we speak, you tell me, how can you enjoy the good life? Rome is burning, son. And the problem is not with the people that started this. They're past irredeemable. The problem is with us, all of us, who do nothing, who just fiddle, who try to maneuver around the edges of the flame. And I'll tell you something, there are people out there, day to day, all over the world, that are fighting to make things better.
You think it's better to have tried and failed than failing to try, right?
Yeah.
But what is the difference if you end up in the same place?
Mally stares intently at his student.
At least it is something.
Janine walks along a corridor looking preoccupied. She enters an open-plan newsroom and marches past her editor, a heavily built man in shirt sleeves who stands outside his office. She slumps into a seat in the office. He follows her in.
Thanks for knocking. What did L'Enfanterie want?
One-on-one time. Whole hour.
An hour? Jesus. What, a beating or a story?
A big new military move launched as we sat there.
An exclusive. Damn. Details. Let's get the basics up on the scroll right away. What's the action? Janine. Hello?
It stinks. I mean, I don't know. I just came with a bad feeling. It feels...
Feels?
Bogus.
It feels?
Yeah.
I mean, are you being paid to investigate your feelings? I mean, just give me the facts, Janine.
You know, we can't do this again.
Do what again?
We can't just buy the whole little program like we did the run-up at the first...
Oh, will you stand back while my fucking head detonates? This is your guy, right?
It's not my guy.
He goes right to you. He asks you the questions. He's handing you an exclusive. He's giving you a fucking gift.
It's not a gift. It's propaganda. And we don't have to broadcast everything that the government wants us to, do
we? No, we broadcast news. The launch of a new military move is news. Are you feeling a teensy conscience attack here?
No,
what, is it a little late for that? Come on, what is the story? What is the move?
Hey, are you old enough to remember the Who? The Who.
And I'm young enough to listen to him, so
meet
what?
Meet the new boss, same as the old boss. It's the Vietnam-era thinking, you know? And they just repackaged, you know? They're going to send out small platoons, these kids, as bait. It's the same.
That is speculation.
Same old.
We do not air speculation, okay?
No, it's these guys, they're so desperate for a way out. See, they're so desperate to change the subject from Iraq. They're so desperate,
Janine,
for a win that they're listening to Irving. And, you know, I don't blame him because, boy, he is good. But he doesn't have a plan for the day after the attack. No. I mean, he'll croon about hearts and minds, but it's all, you know, helicopters and Marines. That's what... Jesus. Anyway, he couldn't care less about the soft stuff. You know, this whole thing, this strategic... It's a lubricant to get him into the White House.
So what? So the guy's ambitious. So what? But Janine, are you letting your politics cloud your reasoning?
I just try to do my job, that's all.
Your job, if I can bring it back to the 21st century, is to report verifiable facts so I can put them up on the goddamn screen.
There are none, okay? There are no embeds up there. We have to just take his word for it. It's just, how can you stand it so hot in here?
She's on her feet and checks the thermostat.
But I'll tell you something. He does have a plan for after the election. Yeah. And it's not the long, slow peace process.
No. These boys have toys on the high shelf they've not been allowed to use for 50 years. He says, I'm sick of being humiliated.
My God,
they're dying
start
to take
that,
these
that tactical
down
nuclear
and try
paranoia
them out.
Bullshit. I just don't
and find out what a real winning
it,
noise
okay?
sounds like. No, no, no.
I don't
want
to hear
it. He said this to me. I have it. Whatever it takes to win. Here it is. See? Whatever it takes.
Okay, great. Can you please just calm down, okay? Calm down.
He gestures for her to sit. He sits too.
Look, it seems to me like Irving has a plan to go after the guys who attacked us, okay? Now, our viewers will believe that's a good thing. So do I.
What happened to you, Howard? Time was you would take a punch at anybody if you thought it was justified. You know, you were good once.
Yeah, and I didn't think I'd live past 40 either. Come on, Janine.
You can't leave me hanging out here by myself. You just can't do that.
Wrong. I just can't do this. You turn in some loony, speculative what-if story. It's based on what? A woman's intuition? I expected more from you, Janine.
Yeah, you
Jesus
expected
Christ.
Me to turn in a tidy timeline.
That's right.
If we don't do this, Howard, who's going to do it? This is the job. These politicians, these journalists, everybody that says, oh, well, if we'd known then what we know now, it's bullshit. It's bullshit. It was all right there. We knew it. If we had bothered to connect the dots. But we didn't, did we? We just rolled over. Right?
So what happens if you're wrong, Janine, huh? Listen to me. You're 57 years old. You got a mother that needs 24-hour care now. What other network is going to snap you up after this, huh?
All I'm asking
is just don't put me in this position, okay? Your version of this story will never see the light of day, and you know it.
She looks hurt and ponders.
Well, I can't write the one that he gave me. Can't.
Howard, his dark hair receding, peers at her in anguish through his steel-rimmed specs. She stares back defiantly.
I think you ought to think that over.
He leaves her in his office. On the mountain, dark figures loom in a blizzard ahead of Arian and Ernest. Arian takes one out with his rifle. More of the Taliban run towards the two stranded U.S. soldiers.
Get to me! I'm digging!
Arian makes a last-ditch frantic effort to free his leg.
Get to me! Come on! Come on!
Blood splatters amidst the snow as the leg is freed. When his pistol is out of ammo, he picks up the other one and fires on. Arian is on his feet. He limps across to Ernest, firing his rifle, the airbase.
Pilot.
Get back there, make another pass, and clean those fucking tallies out.
Arian sinks down at the side of Ernest. The two exchange glances.
Read the sign.
Mally's clock reads 8:07.
Wait. Are we done?
Okay. Here's my last bit. So bear with me. The decisions you make now, Bud, can't be changed, but with years and years of hard work to redo it. And in those years, you become something different. Everybody does as time passes. You get married, you get into debt. But you're never going to be the same person you are right now. And promise and potential, it's very fickle. And it just might not be there anymore.
Mally gets up and puts on his jacket over his denim shirt.
Are you assuming I already made a decision? And also that I'll live to regret it?
All I'm saying is that you're an adult now. And the tough thing about adulthood is that it starts before you even know it starts. When you're already a dozen decisions into it. But what you need to know, Todd, no lifeguards watching anymore. You're on your own.
You're your own man, and the decisions you make now are yours and yours alone from here until the end.
I'm sorry. The sign says till 8, and it's way after 8.
Yes. Sorry.
So you don't want my decision?
Class meets again Tuesday at 9. I'll find out then.
Todd gets up from his chair, looking uneasy.
Okay, Mona, what?
Professor Malley, the grade you gave me can't be right.
You see, plus? Excuse me. Close the door behind you. Let's see. So.
The mountain.
Ammo?
Mount.
Me too. Reski's not gonna be here in time.
No.
The two lonely and stranded figures wait apprehensively.
Get out of here. Get out of here. Go on.
No way.
You can move, Glendale.
Not even if there was a ladder. Not like this. Not laying down.
With frost on his face, Ernest nods.
Help me up. Help me up.
Arian grabs his friend and struggles to bring him to his feet. They link arms and face the Taliban soldiers who approach through the swirling snow. Raises his empty rifle. The Taliban guns flash. There are images of the two friends with their professor on the point of joining the army, and now of death as their bodies shudder and quiver as they fall into the snow on a mountain in Afghanistan. There's another sweep by the A-10. Missiles explode. It's all too late. The CO and his officers stare gravely at the satellite picture. The CO's throat muscles twitch in anguish. The bodies of the two friends lie side by side in the snow as the rescue helicopter arrives. Janine gets into a taxi. She adjusts her specs with her eyes closed. She opens her eyes. She sees the parks and the war memorials of Washington. She looks out, downhearted. Her taxi passes the White House with the stars and stripes fluttering from the roof. Reflections of the American flag are caught in the car windows. She sees thousands of war graves in neat rows set among trees. She adjusts her specs again as tears prick her eyes. Her hand goes to cover her mouth. There are more war graves, and then more, and then more. On the university campus, Todd settles into a sofa in the common room next to another student. They stare absently at a TV screen advertising cosmetics. Todd stares wearily.
You going to astronomy today?
Yeah, JD's organizing a Madden tourney. Fuck are you doing up so early?
Meeting with Mally.
A caption on the TV screen says breaking news. A fluffy newsreader appears. The other student turns up the sound on the remote.
Husband, Bully Dog, after Fate and Bully Dog's now notorious Pacific Rim tour last summer, when Fate was recorded asking a Japanese reporter how long the bus ride from Tokyo to Beijing would be. Up next, we have our lead story.
The other student turns the sound down.
What do you guys talk about?
Grades.
Is he failing you? He is failing you, isn't he?
No, he's not failing me.
Todd stares at the ticker on the screen.
But you already know what you're getting?
Todd looks distracted.
Huh? You know what you're getting?
The ticker tape tells of Senator Irving's new initiative for troops to seize high ground in a surprise offensive. The end.